Okay, so I said I was going to sketch how the 1935 EPR argument worked, which uses two particles. But then it occurred to me it'd be much better if you went and read the original paper yourselves. It's, every now and then, one of these landmark papers is actually quite readable. And that's true of the 1935 paper by Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen. So I guess you can put it on the. Is it on there already? Okay, great. It's just really nice to read that paper. After you've read that, you might also try and read Niels Bohr's reply, published in the same year. I think it even has the same title. It's much more tricky to read, but it's interesting to get some insight into how he was thinking. So what I'm going to do is go straight into this classification scheme for ontological models due to Harrigan and Spekkans. Okay. So their scheme involves a setup like this. You imagine you have some preparation. Then you have some measurement. And then you have a system passing from the preparation, whatever it is, from the preparation device to the measurement device. And the measurement device has some outcomes, so different lights that might flash, and we label the different outcomes by K. Okay. So there's a sort of an issue that comes up immediately, in that here we're thinking for the for, so far as this classification scheme is concerned. We're thinking in kind of operational terms, in terms of boxes. Whereas what we're really interested in is what's happening at the bottom, so to speak, what the underlying reality is like.
So P is the quantum system.
P is the preparation.
Preparation.
Yeah. And this is the measurement. So when you specify P, you're specifying some particular way of preparing a system. Okay, so there is this issue that this is quite operational, and we're going to try and use it to gain some insight into ontological matters. By ontological, I just mean concerning the things that are real. And by reality, I mean reality. It's difficult to give a fuller definition than that. Okay, So the way this model works is that we imagine that the system, as it passes between the preparation and the measurement, is described by some by specifying the value of some variables. So lambda is the variable here. So lambda could be a discrete variable. It could be a continuous variable. It could be specified by giving a whole bunch of different continuous variables, or anything. So we don't really care how you specify lambda. It could be specified really in any way that works. And when we say lambda belongs to some space of states. So this, we call this the ontic state. If we specify a particular lambda, then we're saying we have a particular real state of affairs, a particular ontic state here. And this is the ontic state space. Okay.
Is there a deep reason why this space is called ontic?
So before Rob Speckens came along, people used to call these hidden variables, and this would be called the hidden variable state space. The problem with that was that these variables aren't necessarily hidden. They may also correspond to things that you can directly see. And so it led to a lot of confusion. So Rob tried to come up with an alternative term, and this was the term he came up with. It's better, but perhaps one could think of an even better term. Okay, and so now what we do is we imagine that we have some, that when we perform a preparation, what we're doing is we're preparing a distribution over these ontic states. So a preparation corresponds to a distribution over ontic states. You don't have to copy this graph exactly. Could be any distribution. Although it shouldn't do this. Okay, and so we'll call this the distribution associated with the given preparation. So the integral of this, integral over this has to be equal to one. And so the idea is that what happens is every time you perform this preparation, you get a particular ontic state, and so you keep doing it over and over again, and the ontic states are selected with probability according to this distribution. Okay. Yeah, this is meant to be a small p. This is a big p. This one stands for preparation, this one stands for probability. And so now, to fully specify this ontological model, we need to know how to calculate the probability for a particular outcome, k. And so what we imagine is that when this system arrives with a particular, in a particular ontic state here, there's some probability for it giving rise to each of the various outcomes. So the net result is that the probability for getting a particular outcome given that you have a certain preparation and a certain measurement, is given by the integral of this quantity. So for each lambda, you have a probability that a particular K will fire, and that's this here. So this is associated with the measurement, measurement outcomes. And this is associated with the preparation. And the only way these two bits are talking to each other is through the lambda, which is what you have here. Okay, so that's the model. That's what we mean by an ontological model in this framework. If it's going to be an ontological model for quantum theory, then it'll better reproduce the results of quantum theory. So we better be equal to the trace of the positive operator associated with the particular outcome K times the density operator associated with the preparation. Okay. I'm using mixed state language here that Joe introduced in his course. Any questions at this stage?
Yes. So the fact that this is an ontological model is comes in from the fact that we have this explicit parameter lambda?
Yes.
Okay. And then, so now we've introduced the density matrix, which talks about the preparation but not the ontic state.
Right.
Why are we saying that the ontic states are
okay, so maybe what I'm going to say now will clarify that, because there's also sort of different possibilities. Okay, but it's a good question, really. This gets to the heart of the whole matter. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give definitions for different sorts of ontological models that kind of have to do with this. So here's the first one. First definition. So the idea here is, actually we discussed this in the last lecture, but I'll now give it in the terms, roughly in the terms that Harrigan and Speckens give it in. The idea is that psi should be all there is. Psi exists and it's all that exists. So, an ontological model for quantum theory is psi-complete if the space of ontic states is isomorphic to the space of projection operators acting on the Hilbert space that's associated with the given system. Okay. One thing to note, I used this rather than just this because there is an overall phase here that doesn't really matter. So you can have different vectors in the Hilbert space that differ only by an overall phase, but they don't really matter and you don't expect them to have anything to do with reality. So we're just interested in the bit that doesn't care about this overall phase. Another way of putting it is that it's the projective Hilbert space. So just the ray associated with your state.
Can you think of any alternative, for example, if it is psi incomplete?
Yes. Yep. and I'll come to that. Yep. So just to finish psi completeness. This means this distribution here is simply a delta function. So associated with a particular preparation of a pure state is a projection operator or ray, and associated with that is a particular hidden variable, and that's the only one where this distribution has any support. So the graph. Is simply a delta function, which is difficult to draw. And if we have a different state, then we have a different delta function. And now, as anticipated by Dennis,
a question: does psi-complete allow for statistical mixtures of states?
So the definition of psi-completeness only concerns the case where you have pure states. If you have a statistical mixture of states, then actually, it can be a bit tricky. So the attitude you probably best to take would be to find a bigger system for where the state is actually pure. You might instead say, well, let's just stick with the system we have and now take a probabilistic mixture. So maybe we have this delta function with a certain probability and then this one with another probability. Which I think under ordinary circumstances, like if you have locality and as long as you're not looking at any other part of the world, that will be fine. But I think you could go wrong with that if you're not careful. So the definition just concerns the pure states, and it remains mute with respect to mixed states. Okay. So the next incomplete means not psi complete, of course. Next definition. That's also a definition. Is psi ontic. Incidentally, with regard to this question about mixed states, one thing you could imagine doing was saying, well, actually, when you have a mixed state, that the mixed state itself is the ontic thing, so that it was your question, wasn't it? That the so you could imagine having sort of row complete theories. I think they're going to be problematic. I don't really know anyone who takes those seriously, but it's certainly a definition you could entertain. So you know, you can imagine, yeah, row completeness. As a possible way forward. Okay, so psi ontic. So here, the idea is that an ontological model is psi ontic if the wave function is real. It doesn't have to be the only thing that's real, but it has to be one of the things that's real. So, an ontological model is psi ontic if any pair of preparations, p psi and p phi, associated with distinct pure quantum states, we have this property. We have that the distributions multiply to zero for all lambda. What that means is that what that means is that if you have a distribution associated with any pair of pure states, they have to be non-overlapping. Okay. So every, all different pure states have to have non-overlapping distributions. So people have debated the question about whether the wave function is a real thing or not since the very beginning of quantum theory. When in some ways it seems to behave like a probability distribution, so it wouldn't be a real thing. But on the other hand, you see interference, which makes it seem like it is a real thing. And so what's nice about this definition is that it gives you a very good criteria for asking the question. If you can prove within these ontological models that the distributions for distinct wave functions always have to be non-overlapping, then you've proved that the wave function is real. And so a few years ago, three authors, Matt Pusey, Jonathan Barrett and Terry Rudolph proved that quantum theory has to be psi-ontic as long as you make a certain supplementary assumption. So this is a big breakthrough in quantum foundations. And I would put that theorem, the PBR theorem. This is psi-ontic. The assumption that the theorem is that the theorem says that quantum theory, some assumptions, gives you psi-ontic. I would put this theorem alongside Bell's theorem in terms of its importance for the field. It's a really important result in quantum foundations. And so Matt Pusey did this when he was just a student at Imperial College. And he's now a postdoc here, and he's going to give you a guest lecture next Monday, the same time slot. Explaining how this theorem comes about.
Yep. Why do non-overlapping distributions mean that the wave function is real?
So, for this reason, if you tell me lambda, then I can simply use this table because I can just extend it, all the different distributions, and I can look up and see what the wave function is. So, lambda implies the wave function. So, in this sense, it's real.
I see.
Yeah. Well, if the distributions are non-overlapping, then it could be there's extra information you see. But by knowing what lambda is, you can look up and see what the wave function is. So that's the thing. Sorry, is it?
How can you tell the difference between two probability distributions that are overlapping or just one probability distribution of a complicated wave function?
So you have two probability distributions that overlap.
Yeah, I mean, the way I'm thinking about it is like how do I know that the state like 1√2 up plus 1√2 down isn't like just the overlapping probability distribution of two distinct wave functions up and down?
Okay, so it has it has different properties from just being a sum of those distributions, and that's what interference tells us. If you think about interference, it's telling you exactly that it has different properties. So that's how you know that. But don't forget, these distributions here aren't the kind of distributions you would normally see in quantum theory, because you don't normally talk about lambda. This could be referring to some deeper theory which goes beyond quantum theory. So, so this is a different space that we're working in here.
I'm gonna pick a number and that's gonna tell me which of several different dice I'm gonna roll.
Right.
And each of those have different outcomes.
Okay.
Then if I distinct outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you then look at the outcome that you get, that tells you which number I picked.
Okay.
Like I don't see why that then is the real thing as opposed to
okay. So I don't fully understand the question, but are you clearer? Okay, good. So you can consider also just using the knot trick. So psi epistemic models. This is another definition. This means not psiontic. I think you may be still thinking about this kind of situation. And then what you have is that for at least two pure states, the distributions overlap. This one doesn't look normalized. Make it bigger. There. Okay. So in this case, you can see that if the underlying state, if the ontic state is in here, in the overlap region, then it's not clear whether you have psi or phi. So the wave function isn't real. It's not written into the underlying state. Any more questions?
How large of an assumption is it that there is an ontic state lambda?
It's a massive assumption, I would say. I think if you think there's no reality, you might say, well, there just isn't any reality, and then you're kind of in trouble. It's not clear what sort of world you're talking about. So if you assume at least there is realism, then I think the existence of Landa seems like a good idea. But actually, I think it doesn't quite follow from realism, because in these ontic models, we're talking about there being a ontic state at a given time, you know, for a given system. And you know, it could be that we're already making assumptions that we shouldn't think in terms of sort of having a real state at a given time, for example. You know, already lessons from general relativity, or special relativity and general relativity, teach us to be cautious with the notion of absolute simultaneity. So it's quite possible that there are some subtle issues there that we ought to be a bit more careful with. Yeah, but I think it's a fairly basic idea. Once you take the world to be, once you take this to be some kind of underlying reality, then it seems like this ought to be the case.
I guess it's like, I'm curious to what extent those assumptions, the assumptions around Landa already sets you up for like proving a psiontic model. If you're already assuming some form of, I guess, Platonism,
mm-hmm.
Or just like where the objects of our like theoretical framework are actually objects in the real world,
okay,
then you're sort of already saying that, because, like, for example, the theory is already lambda ontic.
So, one answer to that question is, if you don't make this additional assumption, then actually you can build some psi epistemic models. at this stage, they're not very compelling models, but they do at least exist. I think that sort of answers your question. You can, if you weaken this assumption, you can still get somewhere. If you don't make this assumption, or some supplementary assumptions, one question you can ask is whether the amount of overlap between these distributions is sort of consistent with your kind of intuition that the quantum state should be thought of as a probabilistic distribution. So you might say, well, I want to think of the quantum state as just corresponding to some a distribution, and then two states that have a fairly big overlap. So if this is quite big, so you take the square of that, well, you'd expect that the amount of the if you integrate over here, that this should be something like equal to that. If you want to account for some idea that this is that the quantum state should be interpreted as a distribution, then it should, then this should be accounted for in terms of what's happening here. And it turns out, even without these assumptions, that doesn't work. And there's some theorems due to Owen Maroney and collaborators of his showing, recent theorems showing that this kind of thing fails. So this is a very active research area at the moment, since the PBR paper, which came out, I think, 2000 and, where are we now? Maybe 2010, something like that. Since then, it's been a very active research area. Okay. Maybe I should continue. So, just a few more definitions. Just one more definition. Do it here. So this also appears in the Harrigan-Speckens paper, and this is just simply the idea that the state space for your ontic variables can be is isomorphic to the Cartesian product of something which is just the state, the quantum state, and some supplementary variables. So the de Broglie-Bohm model, which we'll talk about.
Omega is a supplementary Hilbert space then.
Say that again, sorry?
Omega is the supplementary Hilbert space.
No, it could be, no, this could be an entirely different kind of variable. Mm-hmm. So in the de Broglie-Bohm model, your ontic state space, sorry, is isomorphic to, I should say, the space, this is badly expressed, is isomorphic to the some, sorry, I've written this badly. what am I trying to say here? I mean, you know what I mean. I could say this, lambda. No, that's a word. Is isomorphic to, this space, the space that's comprised of projection operators, and this is element of some other space. Let's call it gamma. Yeah, so the de Broglie-Bohm model is an example like this. And then these extra variables are positions for particles. We'll come to that hopefully tomorrow. Okay. Because you're taking what though, the oh right. Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, it is ruling guys anything where you put. I mean, this the point is here. You imagine you have another set of variables, and so you need the Cartesian product in this case. The most natural thing to, if you wanted to attach something to psi with a tensor product, the most natural thing would be another Hilbert space. Yeah. That's what you're thinking. You could imagine. It's not that I don't know of any interpretations of quantum theory where you have not only the wave function as one of the hidden variables, but you also attach. I don't know anything like that. So I really do want a Cartesian product like I have here. It'll be interesting to look at more general things. But this is consistent with a sort of notion of realism that you're just listing the different things that are real. You know, if you're giving a list, then you're giving the Cartesian product. Okay. So just one last thing from this paper. Yes. Good. Am I allowed to use this fixed board?
Yeah, but it's probably better if you know that, so you can see
that. It's just that I need more space for the other one. I can do it. I can do it. Okay. So let's return to that setting. Okay. So then one diagram that appears in the paper of Harrigan and Speckens, which is quite useful, is this one. So these are the some of the classifications I gave you, and then at the top, at the top we have some yellow chalk. No. Let's use orange. Okay. So now so these are the Scientic ones. These are both Scientic. In this case, you just have the wave function. In this case, you have the wave function plus possibly some supplementary observables. And then these are the ones where the wave function isn't sufficient, isn't everything. So in the case where you need to supplement, or in the case where the wave function it simply isn't part of the underlying state of reality. Okay. So what I want to do now is just talk about the different interpretations that are out there, and sort of plot them on a kind of flow chart where you make decisions as you go along. So let's see how this works. So there's a question we can ask. Is there real stuff? Is realism, basically. So I have a no or yes, or maybe something in between. Sort of, you can think of this as being reality, but not as we know it. So Copenhagen interpretation. I think what I'm really saying is this box doesn't fit into this ontological model framework. But maybe there's something here. And I think it's possible that this framework is just too narrow in some way. There's a sort of modern descendant of the Copenhagen approach called cubism, due to Fuchs and various other people. If we say there is real stuff, then the next question is the wave function real? Okay. Say no. And we have psi epistemic models. This is a relatively new area, I would say, and there's a small amount of work out there now. In more general terms, Rob Speckens has been working on this way of thinking for quite a while. He has some interesting toy models which don't reproduce all of the predictions of quantum theory, but do reproduce many of the predictions. So if we go down this way, then we're in psiontic. This is yes. So the next question is the wave function complete? Or do we have to add something to it? In the case where it isn't, let's say we have the best interpretation here is the de Broglie-Bohm model, which I'm hoping to talk about tomorrow. And in the case where it is, we have one further question, which wasn't mentioned in this classification of Speckens. And I find that a weakness of this Harrigan-Speckens classification. And that is, do we have explicit collapse? If the answer is no, then we're in many worlds territory. And if the answer is yes, then we're looking at collapse models. Collapse models are models where you... So what I mean is, in these collapse models, what you do is you modify the Schrodinger evolution of the wave equation, so that what they're trying to achieve in those models is that as your system gets sufficiently big, this collapse will happen, but for small systems it doesn't. So particles will pass through interferometers without collapsing. However, once they touch a detector, the detector is a big thing, and you'll get a collapse. And there are actual explicit models that achieve this. You're simply applying, so in one version, you're applying an operator which causes this collapse. And it's in that case, the operator is applied to each particle separately, and so that would be on each on each particle's Hilbert space separately. But there's, you know, any model of this nature is a collapse model, and there's many different ways you can imagine setting it up. Into which box? The bottom one. So I've heard it said that there are as many versions of Copenhagen as there are people who think they understand it, and possibly many more. I'm sure there are some versions of Copenhagen which you could put into this box. I've never really understood the Copenhagen interpretation. That's true. Yeah, there's no explicit modification to the Schrodinger equation. Good. That would make it into a sort of well worked out theory, so it would fit in here. One interpretation of the Copenhagen interpretation, is to say that you apply a projection, you have an explicit collapse every time you make a measurement, but then it's not clear what a measurement is, and how do you know a measurement has been made? You know, how is a system? What qualifies a system to actually make a measurement? John Bell said sarcastically, does it have to have a PhD in physics? so, you know, so you guys got to wait. So there's problems with that. I mean, I think that the Copenhagen way of thinking is actually very useful, and it's given rise to a tremendous literature, and certainly my own work has been influenced. The more operational aspect of that interpretation, but I've never understood it. I've never really understood exactly. I think it's not properly a realist interpretation. It's not really saying what it means by reality, and so it's difficult to pin it down.
I have sort of two related questions. So one, by is I complete, do you mean in all quantum theory is complete? And the related question is, where would this fit in if you don't think quantum theory is complete? Like that, there's maybe some other physical theory that we have that will include both unitary
evolution and collapse. Right. Okay. So there's various levels of answering that question. So it could be that the framework of quantum theory, where you have Hilbert spaces, and let's say you have mixed states that live in that act on Hilbert spaces representing states, and you have completely positive maps. Yeah, did Joe do completely positive maps? Yeah, so this kind of framework, the kind of framework that's used to great effect in quantum information for proving theorems, if that's what you mean by quantum theory, then you don't have to explicitly say that unitary evolution is part of that framework. And that leaves you open to consider these sorts of modifications and regard them as still being part of quantum, the more general framework of quantum theory. And so I think psi completeness can still survive as a useful concept, even in collapse models, where you modify the unitary evolution, so you lose the unitary evolution, but you still have the basic framework. But there's a more a serious possibility, and I was going to talk about that last, which is that quantum theory, that the whole framework of quantum theory is really just an effective, it's really just an effective theory, and it's an approximation to some, it's an effective theory for some deeper theory, such as maybe a theory of quantum gravity will be a deeper theory. And that deeper theory might look nothing like quantum theory when it's written down. You know, just like general relativity looks very different from Newtonian physics. Likewise, this deeper theory that perhaps a deeper theory of quantum gravity might look nothing like quantum theory. And then there'd be a certain sense in which it's futile to interpret quantum theory because it's not the fundamental theory. The thing we really need to be interpreting is quantum, in this picture, quantum gravity, the deeper theory. Which has a very different framework. So interpretation becomes a kind of academic exercise, and that's my opinion at the moment, is that really the field of quantum foundations needs to concern itself with constructing new theories, because there's good reasons to think that a new theory will be quite different from quantum theory. On the other hand, I think that that exercise of constructing a theory of quantum gravity is going to be very well informed by all the kinds of conceptual issues that come up in trying to understand quantum theory from the point of view of these different interpretations. But if you take that point of view, then then one gets less concerned about which is the correct interpretation. You know, the field of quantum foundations is full of people who feel very passionately about, you know, their particular model, whether it's which one of these is, especially these two. There are people who really get upset if you disagree with them. I suspect everyone is wrong in the long run, and the point of this is just to help us make a step forward to the next physical theory.
Just to have a general question, when people work on all those subjects, do they try to calculate, say, from different perspectives, some observables that get detested in experiments and that have been calculated based on the standard Schrödinger equation, for example?
Right. So,
or they do something not particularly related to, say, physical observables, for example, energy spectra, or atoms, or some other things from quantum mechanics that have been well established a long time ago.
So I think you're asking about whether people who really believe one of those different interpretations, whether they use those interpretations to do their calculations,
yeah,
whether they believe it that much when they're doing. So first of all, it's only a small set of people who are really doing practical calculations for experiments. Most of us are doing calculations because we're trying to understand something more deeply. And so from that point of view, you know, I think what they're doing is fine. For the most part, I think it's the case. For most experiments you throw at someone, they just do the calculation the regular way. But there are a few examples here and there where these different ways of thinking come in useful. So in de Broglie-Bohm model, if you're interested in the question of arrival times, then this can be a useful way of defining that concept, for example, and doing calculations. So collapse models actually disagree empirically from standard unitary quantum theory. So you can calculate things. So for example, if I had a mole of hydrogen atoms sitting in the ground state, and this is true, one of these collapse models is true, then there would be some excitation rate of those atoms, which will then decay again and emit photons. So you'd actually see some physical effect. Those kinds of experiments tend to push the parameters of these collapse models into a smaller and smaller part of the parameter space. So those are real calculations you can do. One of the big selling points or claims, victory claims of the many worlds interpretation is that it inspired David Deutsch to come up with quantum computation. You know, he was motivated by many worlds to think of, you know, computation as being something that happens in parallel on a quantum computer, and that was what led him to set up this framework that's used for quantum computation. So that's the best answer I can give. Any more questions? Okay, good. So then tomorrow I'll get going on de Broglie-Bohm.